This week on the Special Ed Strategist.
Well, touch has receptors all over our body. Seeing, hearing, smelling, and tasting have receptors in the head. We want to be able to use our sensations to discriminate. Is it red? Is it blue? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it high? Is it low? Is it loud? Is it soft? That's what sensory processing helps us do. So this is very good for auditory discrimination. Another idea is what I call jumping conversation. And this is what one of my grandsons taught me this when he was two. He was not a talker. It took him a while to talk. So give them heavy things to carry. Will they drop the laundry basket and upturn all the clean clothes that you've just folded? Maybe, but maybe not. You know, maybe they'll get that basket upstairs. And that's the point. We have to stretch ourselves to provide opportunities for kids to be active agents. And when they're clumsy and we take away their responsibilities and their chores because it's easier for us and because we think we're tormenting our children by asking them to help, we're really denying them opportunities to learn how to be. And go outside and have the kid find things on the list to help with what they're seeing, what they're touching, what they're talking about, and what they're doing with their bodies.
Hello, and welcome to the Special Ed Strategist Podcast. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and I'm excited we are having a part two. So if you have not listened to part one of Carol Kranowitz, I want you to go and do that. Part one is talking about understanding sensory processing differences, talks about the eight sensory systems and their input, how sensory challenges show up differently in every kiddo, and the importance of play and fun and sensory development. And as we were ending that episode, Carol and I realized we did not give enough information of play and fun and what that looks like and how do we bring fun back with our sensory kiddos. And that's what we're here diving into today for our part two. If you are listening on the podcast, you're going to get a terrific audio version of this, but I'm also going to link a YouTube video so that you can take a peek at Carol's slides and have a little bit of visual to go with your audio. So Carol, thank you so much for joining us again, and I'm excited just to sit and listen to all of your knowledge about out-of-sync kiddos and some fun activities for them.
Oh, great. It's so much fun to work with you, Wendy, and to be addressing people who are out there listening or maybe watching. We'll have a little review of what sensory processing differences are all about and then spend more time with some practical ideas. So this is about fun activities with out-of-sync kids. I'll say right at the start that these are activities that are for all kids. Don't think that they're special for children. They're special for children with special needs. These activities are things that you and I probably did when we were children ourselves, and maybe our grandmothers did them too. My new book, Good Times with Out of Sync Grandkids, is coming out in March 2025. And yes, I'm excited about it. And it's charmingly illustrated. So I hope that you might pick it up someday and take a glance. Just to review about the senses, there are eight senses, and we all know about seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, and touching. These are senses that have receptors all over touch has receptors all over our body. Seeing, hearing, smelling, and tasting have receptors in the head. So the head is a very, very important place. And the information comes into receptors through our ears and our nostrils and our skin. The sensations go to our central nervous system, and the central nervous system says, oh, I've seen this before. What do I do about this ball that's flying through the air toward my head? Do I duck? Do I pick up my baseball bat? How do I respond? So constantly we're getting sensations through our receptors, and we're managing them so that we can survive. Now, there are other senses that are less well known. One is the vestibular sense. The receptors are in the inner ear, and the vestibular sense tells us where our head is in relation to the surface of the earth. Gravity is the stimulus, and gravity tells us if we're lying down, getting out of bed, standing up, going up and down stairs, falling. It's a very essential sense. It's actually considered the master sense, because when we feel like we know where we are as we're moving around, we have some sense of stability and confidence. If we don't feel comfortable in our vestibular sense, we're just going to want to sit or lie down, because moving around makes us dizzy and very uncomfortable. Interoception is the sense of our internal organs, and we have some awareness of it. For instance, we know when we're hungry or need to poop, but we don't know what our gallbladder is doing or our spleen. It just needs to be humming along. Proprioception is the sense of our muscles and joints. So every time we flex or extend our arms and legs, we're activating our proprioceptive sense and getting good, important feedback into our body, which is why we stretch and wiggle, because we need to move around to keep everything else humming. You can learn a lot more about the senses in The Out of Sync Child, now in its third edition. And there are other wonderful books about sensory processing too. Okay, sensory processing differences. Sometimes they're called sensory processing differences when the brain takes in messages from our body and our environment and gets confused about them. And then we don't know whether or how to respond to that ball flying through the air coming at our head. We don't duck, for instance. Difference could make life really difficult for a child or an adult with sensory processing challenges. If the sensory information coming in is so confusing that the person just doesn't want to leave the house, then the condition is called sensory processing disorder. But for many, many kids, it's differences, not disorder. So the child is very sensitive, for instance, to the smell of a ripe banana. Then there are children who use their sense of smell in a refined way, who can tell the difference between flower scents, for instance. So while there are some undesirable aspects to having sensory processing differences, there are some very positive things too about it. Let's remember that sensory processing is on a spectrum. There are things that we would like to help a child feel more comfortable with, and there are things that where the child is really excelling with special sensory skills, like being able to look at a wall. Where's Waldo is an example. A child who has a visual sensory processing difference may be able to spot Waldo right away, and it's amazing. Or there is a famous child with autism. I don't know, I guess he's not a child now, but he was able to look at the Houses of Parliament in London, which he had never seen before. He drove past them in a car and went home and drew them with every single gargoyle and piece of masonry just perfectly. So just to say, we have differences that are not desirable and differences that are very desirable. Okay, behavior means something. So when we see a little child pinching her nose, she's saying, ooh, there's something that makes me think it's stinky. I don't want to be near it. When we see a child covered in shaving cream or finger paint and up to her elbows in it, we would be able to see from that behavior that that child really, really loves messy play. And especially in the young little kids who don't have the words to tell us what they don't like or what they do like, we need to look carefully and look at their behavior. And that behavior will tell us something and we can help them. So wearing sensory spectacles, and for those of you who can see this on YouTube, these are my Party Store sensory spectacles.
Those are fabulous.
Put on your imaginary sensory spectacles and ask yourself a few questions if your child's behavior is somewhat bewildering. First of all, ask yourself, what sensations does the child avoid? This could be unexpected touch or unexpected movement that makes the child tremble or jerk away, t-shirt tags, lumps in socks, scratchy lace, clothing. Clothing can be very, very uncomfortable for children. That's why you might have a child who wants to wear the very well-worn, well-washed velour sweatpant outfit and sweatshirt because it's the only thing that is tolerable against his sensitive skin. In the mouth, lumpy mashed potatoes could be difficult. In the ears, the sound of sirens or alarms or doors slamming. In the eyes, buzzing lights like flickering fluorescent lights that are so common at schools. These things can be bothering sensitive children who are over-responsive, and the rest of the kids don't notice so much, but watch the behavior of the children who are uncomfortable, and it might help you figure out, oh, it's a visual problem with that child. It's an auditory problem with that child. Second question, what sensations does the child actively seek? Look at the child's behavior. Is this child always, always twirling or swinging? Does the child go for tire swings that go in circles? Rotary movement is very, very intense, much more intense to bring in vestibular sensations. Rotary movement is more stimulating than linear movement. Linear movement is gently going forward and back in a regular swing, or swinging in a hammock or a cradle. Those activities are more calming, whereas rotary movement is stimulating. That could, watching a child with that kind of behavior might give you an indication about where his vestibular sense is. Does he need much more vestibular sense than a lot of kids do? Does he need less? Watch if the child is always jumping and fidgeting, chewing on his cuffs and his collars and his pencils. If the child is doing those things, imagine being the child and hearing from the grown-up, let's find a way for you to do some more jumping and wiggling around, and let's find things for you to chew on so that you can get what you need. Wouldn't that be nice? Instead of hearing, stop jumping, stop fidgeting, stop chewing. The child isn't doing those things to get attention or press people's buttons. The child's behavior is telling us what's going on in his nervous system and what he's trying to do to do his self-therapy to get him what he needs. A third question, what sensations calm and organize the child? Sometimes kids don't know what they need, so let's watch and see. Maybe a long, hot bath is really good for a child, but the child wouldn't think to ask for it. Maybe jogging around the block together, or getting lots of hugs, or finding a place to crawl in, to squeeze into, like into a sleeping bag. Maybe those are things that if we offer those activities to a child, maybe that's just what the kid needs. So put on your sensory spectacles, watch what the kid is not doing, watch what the child is going out of his way to do, and think about the things that you've by chance offer to the child that are successful and calming and organizing. Take notes. It's really smart to take notes and then go back and review what you have learned. Okay, we have three basic functions of sensory processing and integration. One basic function is sensory modulation. We take in sensations, they go to our central nervous system, which modulates on that. That means considers them and helps us decide how important these sensations are for our self-protection and our survival. Most of us can tolerate the sound of an ambulance on the street. We understand what it is and we get out of its way and life goes on. But if the sound of an ambulance is causing distress in a person with over-responsivity, then that's our indication that that person needs perhaps some occupational therapy to help calm down that oversensitivity to ordinary sensations in our environment. We need sensory processing for sensory discrimination. We need to be able to get past the sensations that alert us. We don't want to be on alert all the time, which we would be if modulation was not going well. We want to be able to use our sensations to discriminate. Is it red? Is it blue? Is it hot? Is it cold? Is it high? Is it low? Is it loud? Is it soft? That's what sensory processing helps us do. And we need our sensory processing skills for praxis. Praxis is a Greek word. It means action or doing. We need to be able to manage sensations coming into our body from the environment and from our body itself, so that we can put all the sensations together and stand up straight and move and eat and do our homework and put on our pajamas. And everything we do depends on good sensory processing so that we can be praxic. If our senses get in our way, we would be dyspraxic. And Wendy, I think I used this example before, but I'll just say it one more time because I love the example of being dyspraxic when we're putting on a seatbelt in a new car and we fumble with the seatbelt. We don't know where to find it. We have to go looking for it. We don't know how hard to yank on it. Often we yank too hard or not hard enough, and so we have to readjust. We need to use both hands in the process. We need to find the place where the buckle goes. We need to listen to make sure that it's clicked in. All of that uses our tactile, visual, proprioceptive, vestibular, auditory. It doesn't take in, we don't use smell, taste, or interoception to put on a seatbelt, but we use five other senses and we need them.
Yeah.
That's just an example of everything we do uses lots and lots of sensory systems, and they really should work together.
And that's only one example. And you think about just daily life of how many things that your body is trying to filter and process and respond to.
Right. The more important an activity is for our survival, the more senses we use. So when we eat, we are using all eight sensations. Another very important human activity is lovemaking. We use all of our sensory systems for that too. Watching television uses two sensations, our visual and our auditory sense. We can survive without television, but we can't survive without eating. So just think about what, you know, when you watch what your kids are doing, kind of count up how many sensory systems are involved, and you'll be impressed by how many things 21st century kids do that use very, very few sensations.
Yeah, when you said to survive, I think if you asked a teen about social media, they would feel that they could not survive without it. However, yeah. Not using
media. However, yeah, on a desert island, social media is not going to help them eat. Okay, I'm going to move very quickly now. Sensory modulation challenges, children could be over-responsive. And if they're over-responsive, if they're uncomfortable with too much sensory stimulation around them, here's an activity that will help the kids I call the avoiders. I'm thinking about messy play because a lot of children who are over responsive in through their tactile system will step back from the art table and the science table, and they won't want to get involved with the gardening projects. They want to just stay clean. I don't think we can allow children to stay clean. I want to bring them to the table, but I want to make it a little easier for them. So one activity, and this is in the new book, Good Times with Out of Sync Grandkids, one activity is to put tempera paint into Ziploc plastic bags. So you start with a blob of, let's say, yellow. And you can buy tempera paint at art stores or children's toy stores. And you can also find recipes for it. It's easy to make. So put a blob of paint into a Ziploc bag and zip it up. And the child won't be touching the messy finger paint, but he will still have the visual involvement and will be able to poke at the mound of paint in the bag, and will use the edge of his hand to spread it across the inside of the bag, and he can use his index finger to write his initials or make squiggly, funny lines. It's very entertaining and satisfying, and he's not getting messy, but he's got the art project going. Then what you do, you unzip and put in a blob of red and zip it up again and then see what happens. And for very young children, this is so thrilling because they see orange happening. It's like a miracle to them. And then in another bag, put in red and then a blob of blue. And by golly, you're going to get purple. Just one little activity, so simple, and it brings the child to the table. Another idea for children who are avoiders is give them a place to go and get away from it all. Instead of, this is what I call a time in. And you can make an instant time in by throwing a blanket over a table and putting a mound of cushions or a gym mat under the table so there's a nice surface, and let the child go in there with a flashlight and a book and a few stuffed animals to get away from it all. It is a place of privilege. It's a place of quiet, and it's not time out. It's the opposite of time out, which I think is punitive. It's like, I think of the timeout corners, the old stool where the dunce went to sit and wear the dunce's cap. It's punishment. No, when the child is in everybody else's way and he's having a tantrum or yelling or poking at people to keep them away, let him get away. That's what his behavior is trying to tell us. I'm surrounded by too many people. Let me out of here. And let him have a little time in the time in where he can regroup. What a gift.
Then there are teaching them. Oh, yes, sorry to interrupt, but also just teaching the child of these are the feelings and this is how, and here are some ways that you can bring that down and
yes.
Act.
And yes.
And
yes.
What a gift that is of this is how you're feeling and this is how we can help kind of support those feelings.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. That's right. Anger, frustration, negative feelings are natural. And a lot of children with SPD will get enraged more easily than other children because they're frustrated. They can't express what's going on. A 15-year-old can't say, I'm having a problem with my vestibular system, if he doesn't know what, what a vestibular system is. So it's okay to be scared and annoyed. And what we want to do is say, you're okay. I don't know exactly what's going on in your sensory system right now, but I can see you're having a problem and I want to make it okay. So that's our job. Okay, so there are over responsive kids who have problems with modulating sensations. There are kids that I call the stragglers. These are the ones who just don't get it. They're under responsive to sensory information. And what they need and what they're not inclined to go look for themselves is more intense sensory input. So for the stragglers, when I was a preschool teacher, I had crash pads available where the kids could run and jump into a crash pad. And you can make one with, you get a duvet cover, a king-sized duvet cover, or you can just get two flat king-sized sheets and sew them around, sew the edges around 3.5 edges, leave an opening, and stuff pillows and foam and stuff inside. So you've got a big lumpy crash pad, and then you sew up the final edges. So that's really, really delicious to be able to run and jump and land in a crash pad. For another activity for stragglers, the under-responsive kids, is swinging. You might need to draw them over to the swing. You might need to help them get on the swing, but this is a very good activity, either rotary swinging or linear back and forth swinging. I will say that a lot of under-responsive kids love swinging and it stimulates their vestibular system and gets them in gear. Just be careful not to leave them on the tire swing too long because they may not know that it's time to get off. So you need to monitor that, but it is a wonderful way to get kids going. There's a sensory craver who is another type of modulation problem. This is the child who always wants more, more, more. This is like the like an addict for sensory input. Could be that the child likes to eat, not because he's hungry, but because he likes the proprioceptive and tactile input in his mouth. So he doesn't just take three pieces of popcorn, he takes a handful and he shoves it all in his mouth. He doesn't just dip his fingertips into the finger paint, he dips his whole body into it. He turns up the volume on the television. He's bumping and crashing into people all the time, not to annoy them, not to knock them down, but because he really likes that input into his muscles and joints. This is the kind of kid that would benefit from a punching bag like boxers use to practice. And you can give the child boxing gloves or not. Just have him pound on the thing. What did I?
The bag, the bag.
The boxing bag, yeah.
So can and I ask real quick? So have you seen students and kiddos that may be a sensory craver in one environment, but then maybe an avoider in a different environment?
Yes, thank you for that. Yes, some children are generalists. They will avoid all kinds of sensation. I think I can say more commonly they're specialists. So they will find things that they really don't want to touch. And this is interesting, Wendy, when I was helping to guide parents of my preschool students, if I said, I noticed that Paul stays away from the messy play and he doesn't like to pick up the musical instruments like the triangles and the rhythm sticks. And he doesn't, and I listed a few things that Paul would stay away from touching. His parents would say, I don't understand. He's always touching everything. And this is a situation that at school, things are unfamiliar. And it's the child's sensory system is saying, if you don't know it, stay away from it. It might hurt you somehow. At home, everything is familiar. And it needs so much tactile input because we don't realize how much we get just by going through the day. But we're touching stuff constantly. I think we got aware of that during COVID, where we were trying not to touch things. I remember taking a walk during COVID and not touching a bush that I always ran my hand across, as if the bush could give me COVID. But anyway, there's some kids who will touch everything at home because they must. Their nervous system craves input. We crave having things against our skin. So kids will go for what makes them comfortable. So there will be children who will not want touch, but they will crave sound maybe, or movement. And it can go, they're all different permutations of types of sensations that people seek or stay away from. Okay, so What do we want to do for the person, the kid who's got this sensory craving? We give this child more, just as we would give the over-responsive child less by putting the finger paint in the Ziploc bag. For the child who craves sensation, we would selectively give that child more. I'm not saying give him everything, but what we want to do is intensify the sensory load for that child. Two activities I have written about are mummy wrap and bus driver. Mummy wrap is where you take stretchy TheraBands, really the stiff kind, and you wrap it around a kid, and you wrap around the kid from the ankles up. This is, of course, with the child's permission. Some children like their arms wrapped up too. They just love that intense wrap up. And then you let them walk around and pretend that they're mummies. It's called mummy wrap. Another idea is bus driver. This one, you can use a big circle of stretchy band around the child's waist, and two kids get into the circle and they run around the yard, and one of them is the driver in the front and one is the passenger. And then they'll take turns, because everyone actually likes being the passenger. The passenger has more control than the driver. Kids will figure that out pretty quickly. But that resistive activity with something that they can pull against is wonderful for the nervous system. One thing I like to do is go to a bike shop and ask to go through their trash. And I'm holding up a bicycle inner tube here. Bike shops are happy for people like me to come in, because otherwise old inner tubes would go to landfill. I bring them home, cut out the valve, and that's all. And then I wash them and they're ready to go. And they're stiff, resilient, resistive, and two kids can have a lot of fun. Another thing you can do is half hitch two bicycle inner tubes together, so it's a big figure eight, and then have a bunch of kids reeling around the yard inside the figure eight. It's really fun. They fall down, they stand up. They're learning how to use their bodies and listen to the laughter. It's so fun.
That's terrific. And easy.
Easy and cheap. It's free, actually. So for the cravers, provide heavy work activities. That's a term occupational therapists use. Heavy work activities. Have them push, pull, lift, and carry. Will they drop the grocery bag with the potatoes in the bag? Maybe. But you were going to make mashed potatoes anyway. Are these clumsy kids? Maybe. And we tend to say, I can do it faster, neater. I don't have time to let them do stuff. But you do have time, because investing time now into helping kids get to know their bodies and what they can do is a great investment. So give them heavy things to carry. Will they drop the laundry basket and upturn all the clean clothes that you've just folded? Maybe, but maybe not. You know, maybe they'll get that basket upstairs. And that's the point. We have to stretch ourselves to provide opportunities for kids to be active agents. And when they're clumsy and we take away their responsibilities and their chores because it's easier for us, and because we think we're tormenting our children by asking them to help, we're really denying them opportunities to learn how to be.
I love that. Active agents.
Active agents, right. Okay, so I was just talking a lot about modulation problems. There are discrimination challenges. That's where the child may not have modulation problems. He may understand what sensations mean. He may not be uncomfortable with them. He may not crave them, especially. But when he gets this sensory information, he doesn't know what to do with it. And he might say to himself, how can I judge what this is? What does this mean? So I call this kid the sensory jumbler, who's having difficulty differentiating among and between stimuli. So he might pick up a hammer and not know what to do with it, where all the kids around him are at the carpenter's table pounding nails with a hammer, and he doesn't discriminate what to do with it. Discrimination problems often are visual and auditory. So if you have a child who looks at a Where's Waldo picture and can't find Waldo, or can't find his scooter among a pile of scooters, or what's another example? Oh, well, we use our eyes when we're looking at a bowl of strawberries. We use our eyes to see the strawberry that is soft and mushy. So a child might not notice that. It's not going to kill him to eat a soft and mushy strawberry, but other things might get in his way if he's not able to visually discriminate. A traffic light is a good example. He needs to be able to read what color the traffic light is so he'll know when to cross. So here's an example called object categories. An example of an activity, you'd pull together all kinds of things, just things, pencils, coffee cups, eyeglasses in a case, chewing gum, mittens, anything you can find. Make a mound of maybe start with a dozen or 15 items, and then say to your child, put these items into categories of things that go together. And little kids can do this, as well as older kids. Your job is to make a mound of items and then keep your mouth shut, because this is the child's categories. And I gotta tell you, I've done this a million times, and I wanna say, oh, put all the long, shiny things together. And I've learned how to keep my mouth shut, because long, shiny may not be what the child's after. You know, he might put together the ruler that's I think is long and shiny, that I think might go with the water bottle that's long and shiny. And the child might be, his category might be tools I use at school. So he would put the long and shiny ruler with the eraser and the pencil. It's his category. So he gets done categorizing, and there will be things that are left over, and that's fine. They go into the leftover pile. He's got a bunch of red things. He's got a bunch of long and shiny things. He's got a bunch of things that he likes to chew on, whatever. And then another kid gets a chance, and her categories are going to be completely different. This is really fun. I've done it with grown-ups too, and you can spend a lot of time doing it. All right, so that's
interesting to see where their thought pattern is as well. Like what they feel is grouped into different areas for sure.
Really? And, you know, a lot of children with autism have a problem with what's called theory of mind, which means that they tend to think that everybody thinks the way they think. And so an activity with object classification helps children understand that other people see things differently or have different perceptions of what items go together. It helps with that sharing of different perceptions. Some more activities that help with discrimination. One is called Repeat My Beat. And this comes from a book I wrote with Joy Newman. Well, this comes from the NSYNC activity cards. And that's also in a book. These are activities to help kids get in sync. So repeat my beat. I'm going to pound a beat on my desk, and your job is to hear it and tell me what tune it is. Okay, so you take a song that the kid really knows, and don't sing it. You just pound it. You pound it on your knees, you pound it on the table, and then the child repeats it. You could make it much simpler than that. You could just put a tap, something like long, long, short, 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 short. Something simple like that, and have the child repeat it. And then the child gives a pattern and you repeat it. And it won't be organized. The child will just give a jumble of sounds, but it becomes organized when the child gets what the game is. So this is very good for auditory discrimination. Another idea is what I call jumping conversation. And this is what one of my grandsons taught me this when he was two. He was not a talker. It took him a while to talk in a way that we could all have conversations with him. So he was two, and he was very, very agile. And one day we were outside together at a kind of a patio place with stairs, and he jumped down the steps to the patio. And so it was like jump, 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 jump. And then he looked at me like, get it? You want to talk? So I went up to the steps and I did the same thing that he had done. Jump, 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 jump. And we were off and running. And he gave me another pattern. And then I said, okay, it's my turn. And I gave him a jumping pattern. And really nice. It was really nice communication through our bodies, because it wasn't so easy through our mouths. But it was all about auditory too. He was, think what he was getting. He was getting the vestibular from jumping, the proprioception. Every time you jump, you're getting these nice jolts into your muscles and joints. It was auditory. It was visual. It was tactile, because every time you're moving, you're getting your clothes rubbing against your body and your feet are touching the ground, and pretty good and free. That's what I love about my activities. Okay, sensory-based motor challenges. So there are three categories of sensory processing issues. One is the modulation problems. One is discrimination problems. And the third one is sensory-based motor challenges. This is the one about praxis. So commonly, there are postural issues. The child is not able to integrate her tactile, vestibular, and proprioceptive input in a way to help her with her body position and her uprightness and her oomph. So this is these kids with the postural issues tend to sag. If those of you who are watching the video of this, you'll see a picture of a child with her resting her head upon her arm on the table, and she's looks like she's working on a workbook. Now she has an immature grip on the pencil. It's called a dagger grasp, when you hold it as if you're going to stab somebody. And by the time the child is five, kindergarten age or so, she should have tripod grip, where she's using her thumb, her index, and her middle finger to stabilize the pencil. So children with postural issues will have difficulty using utensils, holding things of any weight, holding their heads up. These are kids I call sensory slumpers. You'll recognize these kids. They will have their tongue hanging out of their mouths a lot. That's called overflow. Overflow is recruiting body parts that are not necessary for the task. This comment I'm going to make will date this program to January 2025. I watched the football game last week, and there was a guy making a touchdown, a big, big player. I think he was at one of the Philadelphia Eagles, and his tongue was hanging out of his mouth, and there was a drone camera right in front of him. So we were right there with him as he's running, and his tongue, he had such intense overflow. He was really, his whole body was into running for that touchdown. He made it. Okay, what are we going to do for the?
Do you see people? Right before you said that, I was thinking, Carol, I wonder if you watch kids or watch adults and think, oh, they have this or that, or, you know, and then you told that story, so that answered my question.
Yeah, I do. I do. Like another thing, at a party where there are people standing around, you will often see people with their arms crossed in front of them. And I used to think that those were snobby people who were aloof and just didn't have time for the likes of me. But now I understand that they have tactile over-responsivity. And when their arms are crossed in front of them, they are putting a barrier in front of them so you can't get too close to them. And now I've softened and I'm much more empathetic. And I mean, not as if I would pounce on them, but now I'm very conscious of not wanting to invade their body space, because they're saying with their behavior, don't come close. All right, so what helps posture and balance? Posture and balance games. Two activities that are in good times with out of sync grandkids are walking tall and brush and balance. So walking tall is where you give the child something to carry around on her head. A book is hard. Start with a potholder. I think a banana is not too hard, could be, but, you know, make sure that you start with what's possible. And the job is to hold it on her head and walk around as long as possible. And you can have a little competition, see who can walk around longer or don't. If competition is not called for, don't compete. Just everybody walk around. And you'll find when you're holding something on your head, like a bean bag or a pot holder, I always think it's like the spine gets zipped up. You just see children change their carriage. They are taller, thinking about what's on the top of their head. Another activity is something to practice while you're brushing teeth. This is called brush and balance. I use an electric toothbrush, which is easier for this than a manual one, because you just hold the brush and the brush does the action. And you stand on one foot while you brush upstairs teeth and stand on the other foot when you brush downstairs teeth. And then you can move on to a manual toothbrush too if you want to. But I often find with kids, the brushing stops because they're concentrating so much on what their feet are doing. Okay, and you're supposed to brush at least 1 minute on the top and 1 minute on the bottom. Maybe even longer. Do you know, Wendy, what the recommendation is for time?
I think that's about right. You would think, yeah. I would know that, but.
Yeah, it sounds about right. It's long. A minute is long.
It's a long time. And so it's, yeah, a long time to be on one foot and balance.
Right.
Giggles, I'm
it's
sure.
It's a goal.
It's a goal. That's right.
Another really delightful activity is called Get Snaky. And this is Joy Newman's brilliant idea. What you do is you get laundry rope, and I'm holding up a piece of laundry rope that's about 10 inches here. And you can do this with a group of kids. And you say, okay, this is your snake, and we're going to get to know your snake. Hi, Snaky. And you pretend it's a snake. And then you say to the kids, show me how you balance your snake on your knee, on your head, on your wrist, on your foot. So this is helping with body awareness, posture, following oral directions. That takes a few minutes. Okay, then say, put your snake on the ground in a straight line. And the child bends over and puts it down on the ground. And then you say, show me how you can jump over your snake. Show me how you can jump backward over your snake. Show me how you walk on your snake. Show me how you walk with your snake between your feet. I mean, you can go on and on and on and on. Show me how you walk to the garage door with your snake on your head. Show me how you jump back to me with your snake in your hand. You just use body parts, use different kinds of locomotion, change the tempo, put your snake on your head and tiptoe quickly toward the garage. You can change the target. You can change the activity. You can change the dynamics of how the child goes. You can change the direction. You can have the child go backwards, on a diagonal, in circles. So many things to do. And you just start with a little thing like a piece of laundry line. Very, very fun. Another a problem with kids who have sensory-based motor challenges, there's postural issues. Then there's also dyspraxia. And this is big. Dyspraxia is the opposite of praxis. Praxis is what we want, action and doing. Dyspraxia is when success in carrying through a planned action is hard to come by. This is a child who will say, I can't do that without even trying, because he knows whatever that is going to be too complicated for him. This is the child who says, Mommy, you put on my seatbelt, because it requires a lot of thought and different kinds of actions. I want us all to be sympathetic to the child with dyspraxia. This child who's pulling back and saying, I can't do that, is not doing something to annoy us or to avoid something that he wants to do. He's just feeling pretty discouraged that he doesn't have the wherewithal to do it. So we need to break things down into little chunks that are manageable. If the ball is hard to hit, we need a bigger ball and a shorter distance for it to travel and a bigger bat. If the beanbag falls off his head, we need a bigger beanbag. Just start with where the kid's at so that he can build up from that. I call this child the sensory fumbler. Now, in an activity like putting on a seatbelt in a car, there are three steps to praxis. One is ideation. This is where we come up with the idea that we want to do something. We want to put on a seatbelt. It's called ideation. The second part of praxis is motor planning. How am I going to do it? The third part is execution of the new action. So a kid with dyspraxia can have problems coming up with the idea, or maybe he does come up with the idea, but he can't go to the next step, which is motor planning. Or maybe the kid really can think, oh, I know what I'm supposed to do, but then the body is disappointing and the body doesn't cooperate to help with the seatbelt. So we need to break it down into smaller things that are possible for success. So here's an activity. I call this pitch in. You get bean bags, or what else could you use instead of bean bags? Small stuffed animals, potholders. And then you get three receptacles, like three different pails. You draw a line in the dirt outside and set the pails at three different distances, maybe a yard away, maybe 4 feet away, maybe 5 feet away. Have the child stand behind the line that you've drawn in the dirt with his pile of bean bags, and just have him practice pitching into the receptacle. The receptacle should be wide enough, like a Rubbermaid bin, so he's going to be successful. And then push the receptacles further and further away, so the challenge continues. This is like homemade, what is that game, cornhole. It's like cornhole. Cornhole is fun, but it's hard. Those holes are little, and this is cornhole with bigger holes, and it's free because you've got the stuff lying around your house. And then there's this very sweet feeling of success when the beanbag goes into the receptacle. Make it happen. Okay, that's called pitch in. Here's another activity, stoop, stand, drop. Now this one uses tubes. I'm holding up a wrapping paper tube here. It's huge. It's at least a yard long. You can also use paper towel rolls. So here are two round tubes. And what you do is you give the child a tube and a collection of little pebbles. And you show the child how to pick up a pebble and drop it into the tube. So this is what pleased my little grandson. This is the same grandson who taught me how to have a jumping conversation on the patio. This little guy just loved this game. There was a mound of stones, maybe 50 stones, and he would bend down, pick it up, stand up, and drop it through the tube that he was holding steadily. So that took a lot to be able to hold that tube and not tip it over, but this was his game that he made up. He used up all the pebbles, and then he stood next to his tube, slowly lifted the tube off the ground, and all the pebbles fell on the ground in a puddle. That was the game.
So fun.
I just remember that quiet concentration. He was in the flow with this. At one point, I remembered this too. I picked up a few pebbles to hand to him so he would not have to bend down, because I'm old and I don't like bending down myself. He wasn't old. He took my hand and he tipped it over so my palm was facing down, and I understood I was to let go of the pebbles and let them fall, because the game was bend down, stand up, and drop it through the tube. So satisfying. Okay, what helps all kids? Well, you know, a lot of these things that I've just been talking about would help a lot of kids. Sometimes you do need to do some fine tuning. Lots of times one activity will please children with all kinds of sensory challenges. Okay, here's one for everybody. This is called arm circles. And wherever you are, we should do this now, whether you can see me or not. Just extend your arms to the side and make your arms go in big circles and go in the other direction. And you should just be feeling this through your hands, elbows, shoulders, back. Now, put your arms back behind you and make circles. And you'll, if you are stuck in front of a computer a lot during the day, you will feel how good this feels. Make your scapula come as close together in the back as you can. This is so good for your posture. Good. Okay, that's called arm circles. Now put your arms down and you feel a little tingling through your arms. Mm-hmm. Your back, you should, yeah.
That's great.
What's a kid doing when he's at school and he's fidgeting? He's looking for proprioception. That's what this is. This is proprioception. This is wake up. Wake up those muscles. Get them moving together. Now I can concentrate. Never tell a child to stop moving. When you see a kid who's got to move, build in an extra recess. Or stand up next to the chair and march next to the chair for 2 minutes. When you see the child moving, he's saying with his behavior, gotta move. And that's what we need to do. All right, here's one more activity for everybody. This is called levitation. Put your hands on the edges of your chair on the sides and push down and move your butt off the seat of your chair. So rise up and come down and do this a few more times. Hang in the air as long as you can and come down again. Okay, that's another shoulder tingler. And you can add to that, you can stick your legs out in front and hold your legs up as high as you can at the same time that you're getting your buttocks off the chair, and just takes a minute and now you're able to work a little better. Okay, what helps everybody? Think push, pull, lift, and carry. Give jobs to kids to do. Don't give them the bread to carry in from the grocery store. Give them the potatoes. Make them work. And you know what? It's not making them work. They want this work. Children want to do heavy stuff. And they want to load their cargo pants with rocks. And they want to push a carton filled with sandbox toys. They love that. And we think, oh, we should make it easier for the child. No, we should make it harder for the child, harder in activity, not a harder challenge that they can't meet. We want to remember just right challenges, which are not too easy, not too hard, but present action to the child to help him learn new skills about how to manage stuff in his body and in his environment. We want to give them a lot of deep pressure too in their bodies, lots of hugs. Okay, resistive activities. Hold up the wall. This is one where you say to a bunch of kids or to one kid, oh my gosh, the wall's falling down. We gotta go hold up the wall. And this is very funny. And you go and you press your hands against the wall or your back against the wall. For older kids, you don't have to say that. You can just say, go press against the wall, dear. You'll feel better after you push your head against the wall. And, you know, a lot of kids wouldn't think to do it, or maybe they'd like to do it, but they think it's not appropriate. Give them permission to go. And that pressing the body is very calming. Shape stretch is another activity. I do this with the famous bicycle inner tube or with a big piece of TheraBand that is tied together. Give the child a large piece of it and say, show me how you make a triangle. And he'll step on it and then take two hands and pull the hands apart. Or he might put it to make a triangle, he might put one, his head might be the apex of a triangle and he might have his feet wide at the bottom so that it's the width is at the bottom. Suggest that the child make a square and then he's off and running. You know, some kids will say, okay, I'm going to do an octagon now, which is pretty hard to do. You got to use every elbow and knee that you've got. Anyway, again, only takes a minute. have the stretchy material on hand, and you're going to get past some sticky points in the day if you're giving children some sensory input to help them get organized and recentered. I'm getting near the end now. I want to just say something about affordances. An affordance is a term, what's his name? I think his name is James Gibson, is the psychologist who came up with this idea. An affordance is the quality of an object or an environment that allows a person to perform an action. Okay, that's lots of words for saying that give the child a carton and the carton has many affordances. The child can decorate it, he can get into it, he can push it, he can pull it. So what you want to do is give kids a piece of laundry rope or a wrapping paper tube or a carton, no batteries, no buttons. Just show me what you can do with it. And here's the interesting thing. Children with sensory processing issues may not come up with a lot of ideas. They do not tend to ideate quickly. Give the child a piece of laundry rope and the typical child will say, oh, I can do 10 things with it. A paper plate, give the child a paper plate. What can you do with it? 10 things, easy. Give the child with sensory processing problems a paper plate and the child might say, I don't know. So we got to get in there fast and keep giving paper plates and pieces of laundry rope and bicycle inner tubes to kids and say, show me what you can do with it. We have to encourage them to try things that they didn't know they could do.
And what a beautiful space you're providing just for not only the physical, the sensory, but the creativeness of
yes.
that and building capacity and building confidence and feeling supported and feeling cared for. It's just an amazing space of growth that you can, within a couple of thoughts and just items that are around you in your home or your classroom, be able to create this for our kiddos.
Yeah. And Wendy, you keep coming back to the emotional development of children. And I'm with you totally on that. Empowering our kids, not making life easy for them, but empowering them to be able to do more and more all the time. You know, I'm convinced we make life harder for our children in the future by making it easy for them now. If they're struggling to get their pajamas on, maybe change the pajamas or give them more time or let them choose the next pattern. Give the job is always going to be there. There's always going to be the need to put on pajamas. So let's work it out so that the kid has capabilities.
But I think capacity. You said it, that just right challenge is huge,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So we don't want to frustrate and overwhelm, but we don't want to make it so easy or do it for them. So finding that balance of that just right challenge to continue to push them forward. And even, you know, we're talking about our little friends, but as they get older, this then becomes in the academic realm as well, right? That just right challenge within a classroom setting and then helping them and teaching that skill of breaking things down that are difficult really transcends beyond the sensory component, but just our life skills and success in the classroom and beyond and in the community and at home.
Exactly. Yes. All right, quickly, here's a just right challenge activity. This is called Nature Bracelet, and everybody loves this. You get some masking tape, sticky side outside, so it's not against the child's skin, and you make a comfortable bracelet for the child, and then go outside and say, find things to stick on the bracelet. And of course, you want to guide the child away from the neighbor's carefully cultivated tulips, but weeds are good, dandelions are great. And in an instant, the child has a beautiful bracelet. Then you can remove it and tuck the ends under and stick it on a piece of paper that you can put on the bulletin board or the refrigerator. And it's beautiful. It's art. And the child will say, can I do another one? Of course, you've got endless masking tape, right? So And it gets kids outside, and this is great for visual discrimination. This is an outdoor activity, and every outdoor activity is better than an indoor activity. Okay, one of those perfect ones. Get kids outside as much as you can. Get them learning how to go on a little hike and jump from tree stumps and pick up leaves and throw sticks and learn about the environment outside. Not computer skills. Little kids do not need computer skills. They need world life skills. Just remember, the more important the activity, the more senses we use and the more we remember. So, with supervised permissiveness, get the kids outside, let them explore their environment, let them get dirty. I'm all for dirt. I know I'm coming to the end here, but here's scavenger hunt. Scavenger hunt activity is just make a list of things to go look for, and it can be nature things like dandelions, pine cones, acorns, helicopter seeds that come from, I think, maple trees, or things that are round, bumpy, red, soft, and go outside and have the kid find things on the list to help with what they're seeing, what they're touching, what they're talking about, and what they're doing with their bodies. Fun with sticks is another activity that's spelled out in Good Times with Out of Sync Grandkids. Right now on the screen, I have a picture of my books, my Out of Sync books, and also of In Sync materials that I've done with Joy Newman. And that does it. I could go and go and go and go. Thank you for all this time and all your patience. And you know what to do. That's the beauty of my activities. You've got it. You did it as kids. And bring it out again. Throw away the electronics. They're not teaching our kids what we know are important skills.
Such a breath of fresh air and energy, and just again that permission to go have fun and let kids be kids and stomp in the puddles and feel the grass and play in the snow and all of those good things and as you said, life skills. So I appreciate your time and all of your talents. So thank you so much.
My very great pleasure, Wendy.
Thanks for tuning in to the Special Ed Strategist. Remember, the right support can make all the difference. As your dedicated Special Ed Strategist, I'm here to guide, collaborate, and empower your kiddos' success. Keep igniting potential one step at a time. Until next time, take care and keep strategizing. Today's episode is brought to you by Learning Essentials and our Cracking the Code to Special Education Eligibility course. Empower your advocacy, erase confusion, and unlock the services your kiddo deserves. Learn more at learningessentialsedu.com.